You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, November 22nd, feast day of Saint Cecilia. We are just T-minus 2 days away from Thanksgiving Day, and my pleasure to be with you. Hopefully, over the next couple of hours, we'll do our part to sort of hasten your waiting, make it speed up a little bit, because you'll be having so much fun. Guests at the bottom of the hour will be Ines San Martin of Crux. Ines, who's a regular guest on the program, she works with John Allen over there from the Eternal City. She's originally from Argentina, but does great work. She's going to be talking a little bit about this past weekend's consistory called by Pope Francis, in which he elevated, I think it was 19 new cardinals. And Pope Francis putting his own particular stamp on the naming of cardinals from places that are out of the way and unexpected, a pope of the margins selecting cardinals from the margins. And we'll talk to Ines San Martin about that and anything else going on. And then in the second hour, my guest will be Judith Dupre. We had Judith on actually a couple of months ago to talk about architecture and 9/11 in particular. She's written a book on skyscrapers. She's written a book on the 9/11 memorial and the One World Trade Center that has been erected there at the site of Ground Zero. She's also a devout Catholic and has an excellent book. And really, I tell you, and I put its link on the show's Facebook page, it is a book that would make an excellent Christmas gift, hardcover from Random House. And you can find it very inexpensively, both new and used, on Amazon.com. It's a book called Full of Grace, Encountering Mary in Faith, Art, and Life. And it's a beautiful book with, I think, 59 different meditations on the Blessed Mother, as well as examples of Mary and art from all sorts of cultures and ages throughout history. She also looks at the Blessed Mother very much as a figure who is appealing not only to Catholics, but to other groups like Muslims, for example. And but that she has there's almost a primeval affection for the Blessed Mother in every human person. And so it's really a beautiful book. And we'll have her on in the second hour talking about the book, what inspired her to write it, her own lifelong love of the Blessed Mother, and how to encounter her, as I said, in faith, art, and life. All that and more coming in the second hour. Certainly, we welcome your calls anytime on the program today. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or if you've got a thought or a question, thought can be a dangerous thing, but we'd love to hear it. 573-4BREAD-4, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. We'll give you the question of the day in the next segment. As I said, today, the feast day of Saint Cecilia, Virgin and Martyr. We'll talk about her a little bit in the second hour. Thanks for your prayers for my wife. Turns out she went to the doctor yesterday, does not have the flu, but mercy, she may as well have. Just has been just achy all over, horrible chest congestion, basically largely bedfast since Saturday, so I think she's on the turn, but keep her in prayers because, you know, she's a busy person. And as most of us, it's like you don't have time to get sick. And yet at the same time, you know, you got to listen to your body. So that's what's going on with her. So please keep her in your prayers, as well as my son, who will be coming home from his experience in this Military Challenge Academy. My 16-year-old son will be coming home for the first time in 4 months. For Thanksgiving. So pray that all that goes well as well. And I'll keep you in my prayers. In fact, since we'll talk about the Blessed Mother today, we'll say a Hail Mary together for all our concerns and needs, whatever you have lifted up. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Hail Mary, full of grace. The Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Saint Cecilia, Virgin and Martyr, pray for us. We'll also talk about two kinds of Trump blindness a little bit later in the program. And I want to tell you just a little bit about a nice surprise I had in a crossword puzzle. I love crossword puzzles. Really, just about any kind of word puzzle I like. The jumble, for example, I love the jumble. But the crossword, now, I would say I'm pretty mediocre at crossword completion. Still, one of my bucket list goals in life is to complete a Sunday New York Times crossword puzzle without cheating. Haven't done it yet. Gotten close, but those New York Times Sunday ones are pretty difficult. So a number of years ago, somebody, and I think it was maybe my wife or my kids, gave me for Christmas a book of crossword puzzles that I'm still working on. Pick it up from time to time and fill in the squares. And it's these crossword puzzles were all taken from USA Today. So they're not as daunting, typically, as a New York Times puzzle, but still a lot of fun. And so I was filling out one the other day, just kind of a casual moment, and I came across this, clue where something wonderful is created. Where something wonderful is created. So my mind was racing. It was four letters. I didn't yet have any of the any of the squares around it, so I didn't have any help there. So where something wonderful is created, I couldn't think of it. Where something, it was rolling around in my brain. I was trying to imagine different things. So I decided, okay, good crossword strategy. You can't get that word. Do some of the other ones around it, and then you'll gradually, kind of like Wheel of Fortune, you'll have a letter here and a letter there. Maybe you can figure it out. And so I started doing that. And lo and behold, I saw that the first letter was a W. And then I found out that the last letter was a B. And then all of a sudden I realized what it was. Now you would think that I, as a Catholic, who is a profound believer in the mystery of family life and procreation and the gift of life and being a pro-life person, belief in human dignity and sanctity from conception to natural death, it would have just come right to me. But you don't expect to encounter in a crossword puzzle that the answer to where something wonderful created, where something wonderful is created, is the word womb. Womb. That was pretty cool, to be honest with you. Particularly today, as we talk about the Blessed Mother, and of course, in her womb, there was, we have to be careful with Jesus, of course. His human nature certainly generated within her womb, his divinity, uncreated and co-eternal with the Father, mystery of mysteries, there at the moment of her conception, of the conception within her womb, her virginal conception. The divine, eternal Son of God assumed human flesh in that moment, what we call the hypostatic union, divinity and humanity united together irrevocably. But it's within the womb that something wonderful is created. That's you and me. Now, I looked up at the top of the clue just to see, and I noticed maybe in the puzzle there were a couple of other faith-related things, and so I looked up the name of beauty of social media and the world we live in. I looked up the name at the top of the page of who wrote the crossword puzzle, a woman by the name of Elizabeth Gorski, and I got on social media, looked her up on Facebook, and lo and behold, there she was. And guess what? Our mutual friend, we had a mutual Facebook friend. Our mutual Facebook friend was Judith Dupre, who will be my guest in the second hour today. Talking about full of grace, encountering Mary in faith, art, and life. So that was pretty providential. I'll have to talk to Judith when I have her on the show in the next hour. Judith, also from New York City, is Miss Gorski. And I talked to Ms. Gorski. She's going through a challenge right now. Lost her mother a couple of weeks ago, and I invited her to come onto the program, talk a little bit about her own perspective as a crossword puzzle creator. Got to appreciate someone with a love for the puzzle. So she's agreed to come on in the spring when things settle down a little bit, but keep her in your prayers if you would. But, you know, that was a serendipitous gift to me where something wonderful is created. Oh, if we could just, you know, we fight so much in the public square and, you know, the so-called culture wars. We in the halls of politics on the issues of the pro-life cause and particularly issues about justice for the most vulnerable and innocent among us, the unborn child, and the legal, the legal endorsement or at least permission in our government, our civil society, the great human rights cause of our time, the unborn. But I think we sometimes don't think enough of what it is to communicate, to really evangelize around this whole understanding of the sanctity of the womb and how there's something wonderful that happens there, even when the child is not planned or even if the child is conceived under terrible circumstances. We read Psalm 139. You know, fearfully and wonderfully made. So thank God for a crossword puzzle. Thank God for His grace. Thank God that you and me were brought into this world by His grace. We'll be back with more Question of the Day. This is The Mike Allen Show. You're listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes past the hour, you are back on the Mike Allen Show here on Breadbox Media. Want to learn more about what we do here at Breadbox Media? Then check us out at breadboxmedia.com. Pretty simple, really. Download the app if you haven't already for your smartphone. You can have Breadbox Media with you wherever you go. If you're limited on your data, just make sure there is Wi-Fi nearby. If not, listen away anywhere you go. You can always listen, too, through other devices, through online streaming. You can listen to podcasts or subscribe to podcasts. Got a good friend, Amy, who listens to the podcasts. Hello, Amy. Usually a day behind, and so she always lets me know if there's any sort of technical difficulty, which is a real plus. You can also support your favorite show. Check out the various ones we have, but support your favorite show by becoming a friend of the show and you can get not only the good feeling of knowing you're supporting something you believe in, but also you have access to exclusive online content, which I just updated for my friends of the show. And if you're one of them, you know who you are. Thanks. Anyway, 573-4-BREAD-4 if you want to call and be part of the program. I'm asking a question of the day because, we not only this Thursday, of course, give thanks, but we also give thanks for leftovers. Because not only is the Thanksgiving meal delicious, of course, but it's even better the second, third time around. There's some people who look more forward to the leftovers than they do the actual meal. So that's my question of the day. What is your favorite Thanksgiving leftover dish? I mean, what's the thing that, you'll sneak into the fridge at midnight or that you will unashamedly eat for breakfast? That you could pull out that's left over, if you're fortunate enough to have leftovers. Maybe you do Thanksgiving at someone else's house and you have no such treat, or maybe you go out to eat. Restaurants typically frown on sending their leftovers home with you. So anyway, what are your thoughts on that? 573-4-BREAD-4. I'll tell you what a few people said on social media, because Facebook, Twitter, always an option. Mike Allen Show, the handle. Deborah says, cold turkey and stuffing sandwich. Okay, not bad. But I am going to take issue, and I saw someone else put stuffing on here. Maybe it's the influence of my more southern in-laws, who my wife originally from Alabama. It's dressing, not stuffing. Dressing. Cornbread dressing. Yes. So I'll go with you if you want to go a cold turkey and dressing sandwich. I'm right there with you. Kim says, I make a fresh cranberry salad. It is absolutely delicious, stirred into plain yogurt for breakfast. Cranberries and yogurt. That's a little bit too healthy for Thanksgiving. Looking forward to it. Cranberries really can't be bought year-round. Kim, you'll be horrified by this, but I actually prefer the canned cranberry sauce, you know, the kind that goes thwack with the ribs of the can grooved into its side that you slice with a knife. That's the cranberries I like. Christy says, all of it again. Well, yeah. Angela says, stuffing with gravy and a little turkey. Gary, now I like Gary. Congealed gravy. I cannot eat enough of it. I usually pop a deviled egg or two in my mouth, too, when I get into those leftovers. And then there's the pies. Don't get me started on the pies. So anyway, 573-4BREAD-4. Chime on in if you want, or email me. You can call or text that number, by the way, or email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or post a response on Facebook or on Twitter. Checking out sports stuff here. Let's see. Golden State. Man, they're finding their groove. You know, they had that opening loss to the Spurs at home. Got whipped at home. First game of the year. A lot of people wringing their hands on the retooled Warriors, whether they were going to be the dominant team that they seem to be on paper. Well, last night they lived up to the hype at Indianapolis against the Pacers. Golden State 120. Pacers 83, and a pretty balanced attack. Klay Thompson, who'd been in a little bit of a shooting slump to start the season, leading all scorers with 25 points. Then Stephen Curry with 22, Kevin Durant 14, Draymond Green with 10. Those kind of numbers. They must have had a pretty productive bench as well, and looking down, they did. So, wow. Warriors serving notice last night. They're still atop the NBA West, along with the LA Clippers, both of them sitting there with two losses, and the Spurs dipping on the heels right behind. Cavaliers leading the way in the East, by the way. NFL, the Raiders continue their rebirth. I mean, how long has it been since the Raiders, or as Howard Cosell would say, the Raiders, how long has it been since they've been relevant? Yet here, after their win in Mexico City last night, sitting at 8-2 with a win over the Texans. Let's see, Brock Osweiler complaining about a laser from the stands. Come on, Brock. Come on, Brock. Buddy, it's okay. Should have stayed with Denver. Should have stayed with Denver. Anyway, Raiders sitting there at 8-2 and looking pretty strong. And along with the NFL, interesting article in terms of Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins with the Washington Redskins, who are another team on quite the roll. That NFC East, brutal. I mean, you got the Cowboys, you've got the Giants, who've won five straight. You got the Skins, who are solid, and the Eagles. Tough division. But Kirk Cousins with the Redskins has been a guy who's really kind of snuck in and all of a sudden become an excellent quarterback. I mean, Cousins was sort of seen as the, you know, as the unfortunate next option after RG3 and all of his injuries and problems. But Kirk Cousins is now shining. This from Yahoo Sports. Kirk Cousins wanted real guaranteed money. The Washington Redskins said no. Instead, they wanted Cousins to sign a team-friendly long-term deal and lower his one-year $19.95 million salary for 2016. Cousins said no. Neither side was happy, and those dynamics are still hanging overhead. But what Kirk Cousins has done is simply up his price tag through his performance. And now the Skins are going to be in a situation where they hope Cousins has a short memory and isn't maybe as petty as Brock Osweiler was, but they're going to have to pony up if they want to keep Kirk Cousins next year, no doubt. The other big news, of course, or speculation is what's going to go on at Texas, the Longhorn football program, by strong whispers that Charlie Strong is out after an embarrassing loss to Kansas, which may have been the final coffin nail. But Charlie Strong is saying that Texas hadn't told him anything yet, which, wow, that's unfortunate. So anyway, it's sort of like in a Catholic diocese, when you move a priest or two at the largest parishes, there's a trickle-down effect, a ripple effect that gets the whole carousel going. That's sort of what's going to happen, perhaps, with college football, with the plum jobs being Texas and LSU and probably Oregon as well. It's going to start a trickle-down reaction, maybe Baylor too. So we'll kind of see. And then the good news for me as a Kentucky basketball fan is my Kentucky Wildcats are now ranked numero uno in the nation after continuing to stay unbeaten with their big win over Duquesne. And, of course, as Duke lost to the Champions Classic, that moves my Wildcats with a whole new lineup, just like Coach Calipari always has, sitting at number one. I don't anticipate they'll stay there forever, but it'll be nice while it lasts, for sure. All right, let's move on to our What Were You Thinking nominees of the day, because we've got a few. Never seemed to be any shortage as we span the globe, go dumb or go home, as we like to say, and find examples of really dumb behavior, I'll be honest with you. How about all those people on social media who, you know, are upset, all those Trump voters want to defend their administration-elect, so offended by the comments from the musical Hamilton directed at the vice president-elect, in which Hamilton actor Brandon Victor Dixon, who played Aaron Burr, the nation's third vice president, spoke from the stage after the curtain call in New York City with some sharp words for the president-elect. And, of course, you know, he's been called out and the whole Hamilton cast, as well as the crowd there, being rude to Vice President Pence or Vice President-elect. Well, interesting enough, people began on social media, Trump supporters, to rip into into the Hamilton cast. Unfortunately, they got their Twitter handles wrong, and they tagged the Hamilton Ontario Theater Company, not the Hamilton musical based out of New York. So, oh man, when Twitter goes wrong, that's kind of what happened. I guess they created there was a flood of online reaction, but they got the wrong. They chose the Hamilton Theater in Canada, not the Hamilton play. So that's your first one right there. Second, when man admits stealing wallet of company president during job interview, the boss stepped out. This was in Japan. The guy decided that the wallet was sitting there. He'd take it. He didn't realize, though, his name and address and contact information were all on his resume. And then finally, there's drunk, and then there's this guy. Man used 7-Eleven cooler as a bathroom. Couldn't find the restroom. Mistook it, the cooler, for the restroom. Walked in, you know, those kind of man cave coolers they've got in there. Let loose on the cases of Busch Light. So anyway, we'll be back with Ines and Martin in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Right at the bottom of the hour, back on the Mike Allen Show. here on this Tuesday, November 22nd, feast day of St. Cecilia, Virgin and Martyr. Pleased to have with us live via the Eternal City, Ines San Martin. Ines, who's been a regular guest on the program, she's originally from Argentina, spends her time now full-time with Crux in Rome, covering all things Vatican, and writes regular articles there on the website Crux Now, and also co-hosts the Crux of the Matter radio show on the Sirius satellite station out of the Archdiocese of New York, Ines San Martin. Hello, Ines.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
All right, fellow radio personality.
Well, personalities, I think, is a stretch, and we're still, you know, in the learning curve. Not like you, we're an expert on this.
Yeah, yeah. The experts must come pretty cheap these days, if that's my qualification. So, anyway, now congratulations. How's that going?
Actually, it's going better than we thought. I mean, we're having a lot of fun, which I think at this point in life is. If an extremely busy person, as John and I are, because as you wrote, I mean, running a news agency and two people running a news agency is a lot of work. So when we thought about doing the radio show, we said, okay, is it going to be fine? And we sort of thought it would be, but we never thought it'd be, you know, as interesting and, you know, as challenging as it's been. So far, so good.
Well, yeah, you both have excellent senses of humor, so I'm sure that helps. Keeps it light. So let's talk a little bit about this past weekend. Of course, Pope Francis with a consistory of new cardinals, 19 new cardinals from all around the world, of course, three from the U.S. It came together really pretty quickly, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Although, I mean, technically, because that's something I actually had to ask John about, because, you know, I'm still new in this business perspective. I thought, you know, cardinals would need more than 5 weeks to get ready. But apparently that's the way it usually works. You know, cardinals get from 5 to 6 weeks because it's usually a surprise announcement. Cardinals might know that their name will come up and they'll be named by the Pope either on a public audience on a Wednesday or a Sunday. But this one, I think, was unexpected, above all because of the day in which Francis announced it. That was the closing of the Jubilee for, you know, those who follow Mary, you know, Mary and have a Marian vocation. So it was definitely an unexpected Sunday. Most of us were like, okay, we know what the news for today is. We can relax a little bit. And then, of course, he brought out that, you know, A4 white page folded and said, okay, by the way, these are the 17 new cardinals. So it was definitely interesting.
Well, you know, there was a lot of talk here in the U.S., of course, that Pope Francis, which is sort of true to his style since he took the papal throne, he bypassed some dioceses, some sees that have typically been cardinal sees, and you know, he went with some selections that were a little bit surprising to people. But that wasn't just true, evidently, in the U.S. That was true on his whole slate of picks from around the world.
Yeah, it was. Something, you know, I particularly trying to understand the reasoning behind this election, which, of course, it's not always clear. I mean, people always wonder, so why this person and not that person? The common denominator between most of the kind of cardinals is actually the fact that Pope Francis has met with all of them personally, with most of them more than once. For instance, the new cardinals in Latin America, there's one in Venezuela, Mexico, and Brazil. None of them from obvious cities. Well, the one in Brazil, I guess, is an obvious city, Brasilia. But all of them are people with whom Pope Francis has worked closely. The same case is the same is for the case of Archbishop Tobin, new cardinal of Newark. This is a man who Pope Francis first met in 2005. They both have exchanged several jokes with each other, which shows that, you know, their relationship goes beyond to the formal high archbishop, high cardinal, your eminence. So that was definitely, you know, for those who knew the relationship between the two, I guess it was an obvious call. But of course, no archbishop goes around promoting, so this is how close I am with the Pope. So it was unexpected, I guess, in that sense, but not so much because, again, they know each other. The same thing, of course, with, you know, Farrell, the new archbishop, well, the new cardinal currently working at the Vatican in the newly created office for the laity and the family. It was an obvious call in that sense, because the Pope had called him to work in a major dicastery, major office here at the Vatican. But the two also knew each other from long back, which is yet another reason why he was chosen to begin with for the new gig.
You know, it's amazing how, of course, the role of the cardinals, among other things, is that when there is, when a pope dies, or now that we've been introduced to this concept by Pope Benedict, resigns, that the cardinals come together in a conclave, at least those who are voting age, 80 and under, I guess, or yeah. under 80, and vote on who the new Bishop of Rome will be. And it's amazing, in 3.5 years as pope, I think, reading your article here, out of the 121 cardinal electors, those who can vote, 44 have been appointed by Francis. So it doesn't take long before the Pope has a pretty big shaping influence on the next conclave.
Definitely. I mean, a lot of it has, of course, to do with the fact that the cardinals are coming of age. Because the tradition is that there has to be around 120. I mean, it's 120, but it could be 119 or 121, 22 cardinals in the college at all times. And by that, I mean 120 cardinals that are under the age of 80, who could, as you very well said, eventually vote for a new pope. In the last 18 months, 13 cardinals, actually 12, went across the 80, and a 13th one will do soon, which is why Pope Francis created the 13 new voting or electoral cardinals. But it's definitely interesting to see how he's reshaping the church. You know, a lot of people are like, are these candidates left-leaning or right-leaning? And the truth is, the Pope is going beyond the politics in his elections, because he's trying very, very hard to guarantee that the College of Cardinals represents the universality of the Church, not just, the Church's strong presence in Italy or the Church's strong presence in Europe, but also trying to be mindful and conscious of the fact that the places where the Church is growing is not necessarily Italy or Europe, but actually in the Global South, which is why we see so many new cardinals from Africa or from countries that have never had one. Like, for instance, in 2014, he created a cardinal in Haiti. This year, the Central African Republic, which hasn't had a cardinal in over 100 years. So again, it's interesting to see that reshaping he's doing to make it, the College of Cardinals even more so universal.
In some of these places, like the U.S., or I think you mentioned, Haiti was another country where the Port-au-Prince, the primary see, was bypassed for, for another person. Of course, bishops are human beings. I mean, do you think there have been hurt feelings, ruffled feathers, all the rest? And I get the sense, if that's true, Pope Francis really doesn't lose a lot of sleep over it.
I think it's a lot. I mean, there are a lot of factors to consider when a pope creates new cardinals. For instance, someone who everyone thought could get a red hat was Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles. The fact that he wasn't chosen this year doesn't mean that he won't get the red hat. It's just, Pope Francis, at the end of the day, he gets to make personal decisions. He didn't make his choices thinking, am I going to hurt this person? Or he was specifically thinking about, what his priorities are, what he's trying to do. And he, went to the people he knows, which doesn't mean, of course, he doesn't like Archbishop Chabu, for instance, of Philadelphia, which is a classic red hat that didn't get red hat seat that didn't get a cardinal this year. Because I have several sources telling me that Pope Francis was actually very impressed with Archbishop Chabu when he welcomed the Pope in Philadelphia last year. He simply made a choice of, bypassing Philly, either because he thought he doesn't, Philadelphia doesn't need a cardinal right now, or because he thought another city needed it more. And that's, at the end of the day, the Pope has to call, and, he wasn't trying to hurt feelings.
Absolutely. Well, I love, too, the selection of the priest, the Albanian priest, Simoni, whose life really has borne witness to a great suffering.
Definitely. I have to tell you, he was by far, for me, the most precious choice this year. He's someone, Pope Francis, again, he met this priest during his trip to Albania in 2014, which was a beautiful trip. I was actually lucky enough to be in that church when the priest was given his testimony, I mean, his witness to the Pope, and the Pope was crying, and everyone was crying. I remember that day with the news being Pope Francis, you know, brought to tears by a priest who survived a concentration camp. I'm like, man, it wasn't just the Pope. Everyone on that church was crying. And it's, you know, it's a beautiful reminder that at the end of the day, bishops and cardinals are people, you know, they're human.
That's
and
right.
they make mistakes. They might go one way or the other, but they, you know, a lot of them have beautiful personal stories. And that's what the Pope is trying to sort of underline.
And the red of the, you know, the, of the red hat is originally meant to be a sign of martyrdom. So being a cardinal isn't about power. It's about willingness to sacrifice and to give one's life.
And, you know, that's also something else to keep in mind, because some, you know, a lot of the time, you know, secular media, well, and everyone, I guess, say, oh, the Pope, you know, is giving power to this person and taking it from the other. A cardinal, you know, being named into the college, being created a cardinal or named into the college of cardinal is a way of restating your promise that you're willing to give your life.
Absolutely. Ines, we're out of time for this segment. Can you hold on for a couple minutes?
Well, I mean, to be truly honest with you, Mike, I actually have the Israeli TV that is waiting for
me. Listen, you go, Ines. We'll catch up with you next time. Have a great beginning of Advent. We'll talk to you soon.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Mike. Always great.
We'll be back in a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Pray for the people of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Just terrible. The school bus accident yesterday, last that I saw, six confirmed killed and over 20 children wounded. You know, as many of us are preparing to celebrate family and friends and so many of God's gifts, there are those families who will be inconsolable with grief over the loss of a child. And certainly pray for those persons and pray for eternal rest for their little ones, and just a parental nightmare, no doubt. So keep people in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and all those who are grieving, particularly during this holiday season, in your prayers. Always a pleasure to have Ines San Martin on the program, and she's a busy person, as you can imagine, and so we're thankful for whatever time we can get. Some interesting insights just to be around there and to get a perspective that she can bring, particularly, and one thing I wanted to get to, ran out of time, I wanted to get her perspective as a non-American who doesn't have any skin in the game, so to speak, and get her thoughts on the reaction that she's encountering to the Donald Trump ascendancy to the White House here coming up January 20th, and what people are saying and thinking about that. I think it'd be very interesting. Particularly, been a lot of speculation about who the ambassador to the Holy See at the Vatican will be in a Trump administration, and what the working relationship will be like between the Vatican and the presidency with Donald Trump in charge. It's a good question. So hopefully we'll be able to catch up with Ines sometime soon, but appreciate the work she and John Allen do at the website Crux Now. Again, my question of the day, what is your favorite Thanksgiving leftover dish? 573-4BREAD-4. You may say all of it, but we're asking you to get specific, right? If you had to pick, what is your favorite? We've got a couple more comments on Facebook. You can also go on Twitter as well. Let's see. Dave says, I don't even know how to pronounce this. This must be a Canadian thing. Poutine. P-O-U-T-I-N-E. Did I say that right? Somebody please call, correct me. He said poutine with Laura, that's his wife's, giblets gravy. Yeah, I think last year I shared that for many years, until last year, I got corrected by one of my students. I had called it giblet gravy. How embarrassing. Tastes good no matter how you say it, though. But Lisa says stuffing and turkey with gravy. Mmm, gravy. Yeah, I mean, just cover everything with gravy, even the cranberry sauce. That's my perspective. You can't go wrong. 573-4BREAD-4, if you want to call or text. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Let's look back in history just a little bit on this day throughout the ages. November 22nd. What are some of the things that happened? 1497, Portuguese navigator Vasco da Gama rounded the Cape of Good Hope there at the bottom of Africa on the way to his first voyage from Europe to reach India. From what I recall, I don't think Mr. da Gama behaved very well, at least to the Indians that he encountered. I could be wrong. 1718 on this day, Blackbeard killed off the North Carolina coast. It's a little town. Actually, we went there on our honeymoon, my wife and I, called Beaufort, North Carolina. There's a Beaufort, South Carolina, but Beaufort, North Carolina, spelled the same way. And Blackbeard used to haunt that place. I need to get back down there. It's been 28 years. Beautiful little town, but Blackbeard killed. 1943, happy birthday to Billie Jean King, 73 years old today. Probably known as much of for her win in the Astrodome over Bobby Riggs as she was her greatness as a female champion. 1958, Jamie Lee Curtis, her birthday. Happy birthday to Jamie Lee, 58 years old today. 1963, Don McLean sings about, the day the music died with the Big Bopper, Ritchie Valens, and Buddy Holly all going down in the plane crash. I don't know what you'd call 1963, but talk about another big trio going down. Of course, John F. Kennedy assassinated in Dallas. The British author Aldous Huxley died. And C.S. Lewis. All three of those died on the same exact day, same exact year. Lewis's death largely overlooked because of that. Happy birthday to Boris Becker, who once was a teen sensation there on the grass at Wimbledon. Now 49. Wow, I'm getting old. 1976, the comic strip Kathy debuted by Kathy Geiswhite. Happy birthday to Scarlett Johansson, 32 years old today. Bill Bixby, died on this day in 1993. Bill Bixby, who died young, I think of a brain tumor. And in 1998, 60 Minutes aired a video of Dr. Jack Kevorkian administering lethal drugs to a terminally ill patient. Here we are almost 20 years later, and I think, sadly enough, physician-assisted suicide or legal suicide gained some ground, largely overlooked in this past election with all the talk about Trump and so forth. So anyway, that's a little run through history. We were talking, one of the topics I wanted to get to today, an interesting column that I ran across in National Review. And the name, you know, the National Review has, which is a conservative publication, of course, has not been kind or supportive in any way to Donald Trump. As I made the comment back before the election, how bad a candidate would Donald Trump have to be seen as a Republican that the National Review would not endorse him against Hillary Clinton, of all persons? I mean, honestly, but I guess you could say the same thing on the other side. I mean, how bad a candidate would Hillary Clinton be that she couldn't get Susan Sarandon's endorsement going against Donald Trump? As we know, it was not the ideal menu for an election. But one of the things that, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, whether there's any crying wolf going on when it comes to the accusations of Donald Trump being a white supremacist or openly racist or openly anti-Semitic and so forth. And I thought the article, which was written by someone who was no fan of Trump, was pretty fair-minded. I agree, we have to be very careful and be very specific in our criticism of and critiquing of the Trump administration whenever the Trump administration, from the point of view of a Catholic sensibility, goes against basic Catholic social principles and teachings about the dignity of the person and so forth, or just basic decency. But we have to be equally careful, I think, that whoever is in the White House, whether it was Bush derangement syndrome that saw nothing good in the former president, Bush 43, whether it was Obama derangement syndrome, which afflicted the right, I think the danger becomes when we become shrill about every single thing that a president or president-elect does. If we are up in arms about everything, then all of a sudden the legitimacy of critiques becomes muted. And as I said, we just sound partisan and shrill. And so I came in this interesting article in National Review, which I think you pay attention when you have a conservative publication writing about a Republican president. You know, when it's one thing when someone has a partisan agenda. So when a liberal publication is openly hostile and critical, you tend to read that with a grain of salt. But when it comes from a conservative publication, I think you should listen. But this is a piece here. I'm trying to see the writer. Yeah, Catherine Timpf, she writes this. Believing every bad thing about Trump is as harmful as denying every bad thing about Trump. Really what she gets into in this piece is what I would call the two kinds of blindness when it comes to a presidential figure, or in this case, Donald Trump, that are equally dangerous. And that is what we might call blind hatred. And then on the other side, blind loyalty. Both of those are deeply problematic. Catherine Timpf writes this, if you're concerned about Trump's power, the best way to give him more is to destroy your own ability to credibly criticize him. She said, when it comes to Donald Trump, a lot of people hold one of two points of view. One, Trump is going to save the world. Don't you dare tell me otherwise. And two, Donald Trump is going to destroy the world. He's going to save the world. Don't you dare tell me otherwise. And two, Donald Trump is going to destroy the world. Don't you dare tell me otherwise. You racist. She says, first of all, I do understand the concerns about Donald Trump. She said, I understand why a Muslim person with family members in another country might be concerned that those family members might not be able to come here without renouncing their religion. And it bothers me to hear so many people dismiss these concerns without a shred of empathy. She also says, as a woman, yes, I understand the concerns about women and some of Donald Trump's laughing and bragging about being able to take advantage of women because he's powerful. As she says, anyone in the media who's criticized Trump knows that you're going to get a Twitter feed full of his supporters. But she says there's also a blind hatred that's a problem as well. This is maybe what I was getting into a little bit yesterday. We have to be very careful. Now, I will say that Donald Trump is not alleviating concerns. He evidently had a private meeting off the record with media, which some anonymous sources basically were him haranguing the media for their bias against him. Doesn't really set a good tone of transparency beginning the administration. Just saying. Maybe we'll pick this up a little bit more in the next hour. This is the Mike Allen Show, and you're listening to Breadbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.